You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is the final chapter of The Frostfair Affair. Chapter 13. Portals for Ladies. After her unpleasant conversation with Octavian Swift, Neem left the palace. She did not stop to check on her other acquaintances in residence. Mrs. Fenchurch would be distracted now that she had her husband back and a life to rebuild. Mrs. Savini would be just as busy dealing with the fact that her own husband was gone forever. Neem was officially a friend of the Queen now, so maids happily loaded her up with everything she needed, including new buttoned boots and a fur-trimmed hood with warming charms installed. She still did not trust that she could provide her own warmth, though her magic was healing nicely. A sleigh was provided, but Neem decided to walk, even if that meant, once she reached the river, crossing the Frostfair one more time. The great frost was predicted to last several more weeks, and various shops and entertainments had thoroughly established themselves in their temporary home. Neem noticed familiar corners and avenues from her previous visits, making this no different to the Arcade of Ladylike Dainties or one of Juno's other favourite haunts. Juno. Neem missed her fiercely, almost as much as she missed the quietness and solitude of the Seaborne estate on the Isle of Memory. Home. Stormbolt would never be home, though it was a pleasanter place to live this winter than it had ever been before. She belonged to it now, as Juno's friend, in a way she never had when she was merely the old Dowager Duchess's niece. Trudging over the ice, her eye constantly distracted by the various stalls and performances, Neem found herself heading for the street of stalls that had once housed Fenchurch and Sons. The printer's tent was gone, of course, under the ice. But someone had sealed it over as good as new, and the glassblower had taken the opportunity to expand. Where his stall had previously featured clever jewellery, baubles and drinking cups, now there were gilded cages, straw baskets, and a long table of artificial grass. There was also quite a crowd gathered around, cooing and awing at what they saw. Neem waited her turn and pushed forward to see for herself. The glassblower had an entire stall of live glass hedgehogs. The size of teacups, they stumbled around adorably and peered at their audience. Many had ribbons tied around them. "The must-have courting gift of the year," announced the glassblower. He caught sight of Neem's surprised face and tipped his hat to her. "What started with an unexpected bit of magic has worked out rather nicely for me," he said in her general direction, "especially once the little critters started having babies." He went back to his patter for the crowd. "So, one less thing to feel guilty about." Neem returned to Stormbolt later in the day, carefully cradling a warm straw basket containing the sweetest glass hedgehog that ever drew breath. Mr. Thornberry came down the stairs, rushing to meet her. "They told me you'd left the palace," he said, doing that thing that she had realised now that he always did after time apart, checking her over to be sure that she was unharmed. It might be annoying if another man did that, but this one had reason to be concerned for her safety. She would allow it. After all, seeing him still gave her a quick jolt of fear and relief all at once, as she remembered he had fallen through the ice and barely survived. "I wanted to walk," said Neem, taking a step backwards, "and to come home. I can only be waited on hand and foot in a strange place for so long before I start feeling like a burglar." Thornberry took both her hands in his. "Did I mention how splendid you were with Mrs. Thranod?" "I can hear it as many times as you care to say it," Neem replied with a smile. "I was magnificent." What has happened with the Countess of Balmody? Still being questioned, he told her. No one is quite ready to believe she was knowingly in league with an assassin, but they were companions for years. How can she not have known something? Neem had witnessed both women as a tight double act. I'd keep an eye on her, she agreed. Her loyalties are compromised at the very least. Mrs. Threnod had given the Countess the sleeping potion, but was that to avert suspicion? Thornbury squeezed her hands. I have to go away for a while, he said. Favour to my father. I'm afraid I don't know when I'll be back. Neem could have answered for him. Never. There would always be another favour, another special request, another mission that only he could handle. She knew that now. I'm sure I'll find some way to occupy myself, she said, with what she hoped was a warm and loving smile. His face softened. Miss Seaborn. Neem. Will you receive me when I return? Inside the covered basket, her new hedgehog sneezed, with a sound like the stem of a champagne glass breaking in half. Neem refused to make any connection between that and how her heart felt right now. I will always be at home to you, Mr. Thornbury, she said quietly. I look forward to hearing about your adventures. Why, I think you must have the most exciting retirement in front of you. He gave her a sheepish smile and kissed her hand. The great frost lasted another 20 days. Once it was over, the Frost Fair was remembered as the best that town had enjoyed in decades. There was, in the end, an elephant, though it turned out to be a rather small one, and many children declared it not worth the bother. The Fenchurch has never returned to the ice. In spring, when Neem delivered a basket of treats for the children to their street address, she learned that some mysterious benefactor had bestowed upon them the funds for a new printing press. This model puffs and blows, and I don't like it as much as the last one, Mrs. Fenchurch grumbled, polishing it with a great deal of pride. But it's not in the river, and that makes it head and shoulders above the last. You're never happy, wife, teased Mr. Fenchurch, holding the baby, while his two sons pored through the basket Neem had brought, sorting the sweetmeats into piles. Don't you start or I'll turf you in the river too, Mrs. Fenchurch threatened. Here, Miss Seaborn, she added. Going to that do at the Continental, are you? We printed all the flyers for that one. I am indeed, said Neem. I'm looking forward to it. Have an ice for me, then, said Mrs. Fenchurch, grinning. Can't stand the stuff myself. What's wrong with a good cup of cider to warm the bones? Thanks to the recent frost fair, the citizens of town had become quite used to spending time on the river. This inspired some enterprising investor to continue the trend. Within a few weeks of the thaw, the Continental Tea Rooms had begun rapid construction, a massive floating pavilion that one could only reach by boat or by portal. It was the first establishment in the Teacup Isles to openly advertise itself as providing portals for ladies. Now, a few weeks into spring, they celebrated their grand opening. I can't believe we're getting there by swan-shaped boat, complained Lady Liesel, who had optimistically worn a spencer over a day dress instead of heavier layers and was regretting it. My bonnet will be all askew by the time we arrive. It's the ceremony of the thing, Juno chided, her own velvet pelisse filling rather more of the boat than was altogether fair. We will purchase our first portal ticket there to support the charity. First ticket, Liesel snorted. If you knew how much I'd paid in bribes to portal watchmen over the last year. Where will you all go? Neem asked, straightening her own bonnet. It was a higher construction of straw and silk than she usually chose, but it had the added benefit of a cosy compartment for her glass hedgehog, Basil, to curl up and nap when he liked. Through your first official portal, I mean. Oh, we're all going to Daisy Affershaw's place, said Juno, with a wave of her gloved hand. You know, the Baron of Dormouse's great-niece. She and her wife have a splendid little seaside apartment 3 islands from here, where the spring sunshine has actually arrived, and she's filled the bath with champagne. Then everybody back to Stormbolt for supper. I've ordered a goose and a concert pianist. Married lady parties sound so much nicer than catching husband parties, said Liesel wistfully. I promised my sister I'd bring her an ice from the Continental, all the way to her school, on the far side of the Isle of Time. It's their open day, so it shouldn't be too difficult, as long as all her little friends don't get wind of it, or I'll be popping back and forth through portals all day, fetching cup after cup of elderflower and pineapple cream. But you can, Juno said delightedly. What a splendid chore! Our Neem changed the world with her pamphlets, and this will, I swear, be the last swan-shaped boat I ever set foot in. The enchanted boat listed slightly, its feathery wings sputtering to a halt. Juno kicked the side, and in a cloud of feathers they were propelled forward across the river once again. I didn't change anything, said Neem, who had come to terms with this. The world was ready to change, and I nudged it forward. The Queen did the rest. You nudged it in the right direction, which was into the lap of the Queen, said Lady Liesel. That's the trick. Take the credit while you can, said Juno, and we shall all profit from being your friends. The notorious Miss Mnemosyne Seaborn, she cheered, and Liesel cheered alongside her. At the Continental, they were greeted with balloons of brandy, frozen desserts, and a gabble of well-dressed ladies bubbling with excitement. The portals were on display, wide archways draped with ribbon and lace and hothouse flowers because, of course, if they were for ladies, they must be ornamental as well as functional. Neem noticed that the width was more generous than with gentlemen's portals, as if the builders anticipated the return of hooped petticoats at some point in the future. If she had to start another campaign to prevent the return of that particular fashion, she would. The assembly of ladies was all in a whirl of conversation and sugary treats. Everything that Neem had dreaded about town before this winter. Neem was notorious again, still. But her involvement with the Queen's decree in support of portal equality and the rumours of the Savini affair meant that most of the ladies were far more interested in befriending her than whispering about her behind her back. This notoriety, at least, was for something she had done, and not for the crimes of her family. Neem still found it exhausting. When it was her turn to hand over her charity ticket and step through the portal, Neem did not have to think about her destination. She wrote her address in firm letters and handed it to the attendant. She was going home. Shellich Standing, the Seaborn estate, was blissfully quiet for the rest of the spring. Neem's mama, Lady Galatea Seaborn, took to portal travel like a duck to water. Now that the family scandal had died down ever so slightly, she committed herself to visiting everyone she had ever met. She was having so much fun. She hadn't even mentioned Neem's lack of a husband in weeks. Neem's papa, much happier now that his wife was not spending all her time huffing and sighing around his favourite haunt on the Isle of Bath, had chosen to stay home and work on a new book about the history of whelks. Neem read and walked and played with Basil and sometimes went whole afternoons without speaking a word to anyone. It was blissful. Yes, she had more visitors than usual, but she had finally convinced Juno and Liesel to at least send a calling card the night before so she could be properly braced for their arrival. She could only hope that, as with portal travel and glass hedgehogs, Neem's preference for guests to provide notice before visiting would start a fashion. One morning, she returned from an early walk on the beach to discover a different calling card awaiting her. "Mr. Charles Thornbury is in the sunshine parlour, Miss Seaborn," the housekeeper informed her. Neem looked down at her salt-encrusted shoes, her third best dress, and the hungry glass hedgehog cradled in her arms. "I'll see him right now," she said, and prided herself in not even glancing in a mirror on her way. She could tell from Mrs. Marchering's face that she was an utter fright, but if Mr. Thornbury didn't want her with wind-blown hair and sea-damp shoes, then what was the point of him? He, of course, was very nicely dressed, in his usual understated way, with a blue silk cravat he could not have bought for himself. His own preference tended towards the grey, and she knew a Duke and Duchess of Storm gift when she saw one. As Neem burst into the room, Mr. Thornbury turned to see her and smiled warmly. She looked him over, to be certain he was all in one piece. He did the same to her, then carefully scooped Basil out of her hands and placed him on the sideboard before kissing her. Mr. Thornbury kissed her, that is, not Basil. Basil was very happy on the sideboard, as he had been eyeing off that poinsettia plant for months. "Is this all right?" Thornbury asked as they came apart from the kiss. "Very all right," said Neem, breathless. "Hello there. Did you catch your villain?" "It's more complicated than that." "It always is. Do you want tea?" "Certainly." They made it through three rounds of tea and sandwiches and all the stories of their time apart before Neem finally lost all patience. "Well, are you going to ask me to marry you again?" Thornbury hid a smile. "I rather thought I might. Your father will be terribly disappointed if I don't, as he just spent half an hour explaining whelks to me, and he'll have to start over again if you find a new suitor." "He does hate meeting new people," Neem agreed. "Do you have any more secrets I should know about? Before I say yes. Big ones," she added, at the look of alarm on his face. "I understand about state secrets." Thornbury spread his hands wide. "You are privy to the worst of my skeletons. In fact, given that you had a recent conversation with my father that neither of you saw fit to inform me about, I would say that you have more than enough reasons to turn me down already." "Don't get ahead of yourself," said Neem. "Answer me this. In marrying you, would I be the wife of a spellcracker, a scholar, a secret agent, or a future spymaster?" Thornbury blinked, and she saw the realization cross his face of what it was she had learned from his father. It came as a shock to him, which was more endearing than it should be. "Would that make a difference to your answer?" he managed finally, looking as if he did not know whether to pull out an engagement ring or jump out the nearest window. Neem pushed the tea trolley aside, the better to wind her arms around his neck. "Answer my question first, my dear, and we'll find out," she told him. The end. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly and the Frost Fair Affair. You'll be able to get hold of an ebook or a paperback version of this novella in November when they go on general sale. Though my Patreon subscribers can read the ebook right now, of course. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. Come back next week for a holiday-themed story, which I have not previously set out in audio. And you can wait until next week to find out which of my many, many, many Christmas stories, my teenager tells me I have a problem, I will be reading for you over the next couple of months. See you then.